Hey, there is something that goes on every Saturday across the country, and you may not be aware of it. And so I'm going to let you in a little bit of secret here that may make your 2018 the best year ever, all right? Around 10 o'clock every Saturday morning all across the country in every Costco, they roll out the free sample carts, okay? Free sample. I don't know if you've ever done they call it the sample run at Costco. I don't know if you've ever done the sample run at Costco, but it'll change your life. Okay? It really will. All right? I'm not even going to ask if you have, but it's fun to watch, right? I mean, you got people who are lined up. They're willing to knock over anybody because they will eat anything if what? If it's free. Exactly. And I mean anything, you know, fried cow, fried pig, cranberry goat cheese, vegetarian sausage, vanilla flavored soy milk, anything, really. And but have you ever witnessed this? Oh, what's wrong? I'm not feeling too good. We'll just go home. I got five more stations to get through. You know, I gotta finish up here, all right? Why? Because they'll eat anything and everything. Now, I'm going to give you an analogy that you'll probably never hear anyplace else, okay? This one's free. Life is a lot like the sample trail at Costco. Sometimes that is exactly how we live our lives, okay? We sample from here, we sample from there, we sample from the other place. We get a little bit from Facebook and a little bit from Fox News and a little bit from our friends at work and a little bit from Shannon when he preaches and a little bit from the Bible and a little bit from, you know, my mom and a little bit from a teacher and a little bit from a friend at work. And we just sort of sample all of these things together, but after a while, oh, we don't feel real well, you know? Our life isn't going the way that we want it to. The path that we're on isn't leading where we want it to go. And to be honest with you, a lot of times it's because we treat life like we're at Costco and there's samples all over the place. We got to learn how to make wise decisions. And that's really what this series is all about. We started a teaching series last week called Psalm 1, in which we're focusing on the very first psalm. It's only 6 verses long. To make it easy on you, we're only really focusing on the first 3 verses, okay? It is an amazing psalm. It's an amazing guide of how to choose a path that leads to blessing. Instead of just sampling life, it's about living life on purpose and making wise decisions. In fact, Psalm 1:6 lays it out very clearly. The psalmist says, "For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish." Two very distinct paths. A path that the Lord watches over and a path that leads to destruction. And which path do you want to be on? I mean, you want to be on the path where God's taking care of you? Or do you want to be on the path where there's doom? Verse 1 says, "Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of mockers." Let me read that again, because that's where we're going to be today. Verse 1. "Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of mockers." You know, that word blessed can be translated a number of different ways throughout the Bible. If you were receiving that daily email that we did all week long, and if not, I'll tell you more about that at the end of the service, you saw that that word is translated or paraphrased as blessed in the NIV, the New King James, the New American Standard. It's translated as happy in the New Revised. It's paraphrased as, you know, how well God must like you in the Message. And then one day I sort of threw out the Amplified Bible, where you just get everything, okay? Because the Amplified Bible tries to take certain words and just give us multiple definitions to try to help us figure out what the text is really saying. So here's what the Amplified Bible says with verse 1. "Blessed, happy, fortunate, prosperous, enviable is the man who walks and lives." Now, it's about this thick, the Bible is. It's not quite that bad, but it's a lot of words to it. So the writer of Psalms is basically saying, this is how you get on the path that leads to happiness. Or, as we said last week, the path that leads to fewer regrets. And then the psalmist says, I'm going to give you some very specific instructions as to how to have this blessed life, how to live this life that is happy or joyful. He says it begins with who you don't hang out with, where you don't go. He says in verse 1, don't walk in the counsel of, or don't walk in step with the wicked. Don't stand in the way of sinners. Don't sit in the seat of mockers. Now, if you're like me, maybe you've heard this verse preached or taught in the past with some kind of progression of sin, where sin, you know, the way we kind of get involved with sin, it moves from walking to standing to sitting. And, you know, we just go from kind of being a bystander to kind of getting a little more involved to kind of be right in the midst of it. And maybe that's what the text is there. But I tend to think there's more to it. You know, we know what walking and standing and sitting are, but they are different in our context than they were in the ancient context when the Psalms were written. If you've been to a Middle Eastern or an African culture, you see a lot of these same types of walking, standing, and sitting that the psalmist would have had in mind. I mean, first, there's walking. If you visit an African culture, you're going to see that almost everybody walks. And they just walk everywhere, and they don't walk alone. You know, they walk in groups. And as you walk, you talk. Okay, it's just kind of where you get your morning dews. You start out each morning just sort of walking together in a group. And then there's standing. And I think maybe this probably refers to the marketplace, because everybody went to the marketplace. I mean, in fact, you went to the marketplace every day. In a time where there is no refrigeration, you got to preserve meat and foods like that, you have to go to the market every day. Now, if you've ever been to a developing nation market, or if you've just watched an episode of The Amazing Race, okay, you probably know what this looks like. There's tons of people, and they're all standing around, and they're all talking with each other. So you start the day walking with the group, learning, talking to each other. Towards the middle or the end of the day, you sort of go to the market, you hang around, you hang out with each other. And then the last part is sitting. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense in our culture. But still today, in a lot of cultures around the world, especially with the men, at the end of the day, they sit. They used to sit in the city gate, now they sit in a sidewalk cafe, they smoke their pipe, and they talk. This is a picture from Jerusalem, okay? So, I mean, this is still the way that things are done. They talk about society, they talk about government, they talk about politics, they just talk. You see, I think that's the idea that the psalmist is trying to get at with the walking and the standing and the sitting. Now, in our culture, it's different. We don't walk anywhere, okay? We might hike, but we don't do a whole lot of talking when we hike. At least I don't. I do a lot of heavy breathing. But, you know, generally, we don't do a lot of talking or walking. And when we do, we don't walk together so much in groups. Standing in the market? Man, I don't even know what that means, okay? Because when I go to the store, I am there to hunt and kill, period. I mean, I go in, I find the aisle I'm supposed to get to, the item I'm supposed to get to, I pick it up, I get in it, you know, I get in the shortest line, hopefully, and then I get out of there, okay? Hopefully there's not a whole lot of standing around. And we don't necessarily sit in groups in the evening either. It works a little bit different in our culture. Depends on how maybe you start your day. You know, when you're getting up in the morning, maybe you turn your news on, you get your news from television, depending on your political persuasion. It might be Fox and Friends, or it might be Morning Joe, whichever way you decide to go. During the day, you know, as you might be talking with some coworkers, you might check Facebook every now and then, interact with your news feed, interact with your friends. At the end of the day, you just want to come home, you just want to sort of veg out, you know, so you don't want to think a whole lot, and so you turn on Netflix and maybe you binge watch The Walking Dead or Stranger Things or The Crown or whatever, okay? But throughout the day, that's kind of where we get our information. It's different than standing and sitting and walking, but the bottom line's still the same. And the question is still the same. Where are you getting your water? Where are we getting our water? well, I say water, but, you know, it's water. Where are we getting our water? Okay? You remember last week we looked at verse 3, which talks about this man who's on this path. He's on the right path. It says that he's like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does prospers. The psalmist says that a huge part of being on this happy path, okay, this path that God blesses, is being nourished by streams of water. This standing, this sitting, this walking has to do with, where are we getting our water from? Are we getting it from good sources? Because here's the truth. Where you draw your water from will determine your path. Period. Okay? Where we draw our water will determine our path. If we go through life with a Costco mentality where we just sort of sample, you know, whatever the world has to give and just pull from here and there, we're ultimately going to have a life where we just feel sick. But if we decide that we're going to draw our nourishment, people who have looked at this text this way, you know, the simple way we can all figure this out is what we need to do is we just need to avoid wicked people, okay? We need to find out who the sinners are in our life, and we need to stay away from them. We need to determine who the mockers are and vow we're never going to sit with those people, okay? We're going to isolate ourselves, but because we live in a modern culture, we got to take it to another level, right? We got to make the decision to sell our TV, okay? We're not going to watch any television. Some of you just woke up. Some of you just went, what? You know, I mean, some of your heads, you just about broke them. What? You know, we're not going to watch any more television, okay? We're going to close out our Facebook account. We're going to cancel our Netflix subscription because, quite frankly, we don't need it because we don't have a TV, right? So we're going to build this bubble around ourselves and around our family. We're going to keep away everything that's evil, everything that's bad, all the sinners and the wicked and the mockers. Anything that doesn't agree with our worldview of what we think the Bible says, we're going to protect ourselves from that. And here's what our life might look like. I mean, I'm pretty sure that Tom Hanks and Wilson were protected from the evils of the world, right? But you see, here's the thing. This seems to make sense. And this is the way that a lot of people choose to live. But the challenge is, when we're trying to figure out how to apply this book, this living, breathing book, to our lives, the only real example we have to follow is who? Jesus. Oh, perfect. You know, it's a great way to answer it, okay? We're starting out the year exactly right. We follow Jesus, okay? We have to look at the question, how did Jesus apply Psalm 1 to his life? Because he knew it. I guarantee you, he had it memorized, okay? He knew Psalm 1 well, and yet when we talk about isolating ourselves from anyone who doesn't agree with our religious views, Jesus didn't live like that. That's not what Jesus did. Jesus was around sinners all the time. You remember early on when he started his earthly ministry, he saw a guy named Matthew who was a tax collector. He was a notorious sinner. And Jesus said, Matthew, why don't you come and follow me? And Matthew said, hey, man, that's awesome. In fact, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to throw a party. I'm going to invite all of my friends, all of my sinner buddies over. Would you come? What'd Jesus do? He went to the party, right? He hung out with the sinners. Another time he was all by himself in Samaria by a well. This woman came in who, in her village, she was like patient zero with sin, okay? She came to the well, and she and Jesus talked, the two of them. He engaged her in conversation. He didn't say, whoa, you can't get in. I got this bubble. You can't get close to me, right? Another time, he's walking through Jericho, and there's this guy named Zacchaeus who is, again, another crooked tax collector. And remember what Jesus said to him? Hey, today I'm having lunch with you at your house. I mean, it's unbelievable. Jesus hung out with sinners all the time. But here's the deal. Jesus didn't draw his water from sinners. He didn't get his nourishment from people who had a different worldview. He didn't look at the wicked and say, hey, what do you think? What do you think I should do? How do you feel about this? Jesus was not influenced by those on the outside. He influenced them. I'm going to give you a second analogy that, again, you'll probably never hear anyplace else. This works for me. Maybe it'll work for you. Maybe you'll just get up and leave. I don't know. So I hope it's not that, okay? Here it is. I think we should treat sinners like we treat Carolina fans. Okay, it might need some explanation, okay? I'm not a Tar Heel fan. I know, shocker, okay? Shocker to those of you who actually know me. I'm just not. I grew up, and I was, until about 4 years ago, a diehard Wake Forest fan, okay? Just like my dad. From the time that I knew that you could pull for a basketball team, because that's really all there is, right? I mean, we don't really watch that much football. But basketball, not in the South, or at least not in the ACC South, right? From the time I knew about basketball, I pulled for Wake Forest. Now, if you know anything about Wake Forest, you know that Carolina is their hated rival. Carolina doesn't hate Wake because Wake's never really that good. So it's not a problem, okay? But about 4 years ago, I said, you know what? I'm done. I mean, if Wake Forest doesn't care if they win, I mean, if they're going to keep this Coach Bezdelic on, who in his 17-51 ACC record, if they don't care if they win, I don't care if they win. And I just said, I'm done. I'll pick another team and pull for them. So I'm not a Wake Forest fan anymore. But it doesn't change the way I feel about Carolina, okay? I'll give you a little deeper insight. In the spring of 1982, after I had been accepted at the only university that I applied to, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, right? I was only going because I wanted to be a pharmacist, and they had the only pharmacy school in the state. That's the only reason. But knowing that in less than 6 months I was going to be a freshman at the university, I cheered and cheered hard for Georgetown in the NCAA final. Okay, that's just my mentality. But here's the deal. Make sure you hear this. I don't hate Carolina fans. Okay? I just don't. My son is about to start his second semester at the university, and I could not be prouder. I mean, I got this in the mail yesterday, and I will display it proudly somewhere. Okay? Somewhere. I really will. I will display it. I don't hate him. I don't hate you. A lot of my friends are Carolina fans. Relationally, we're good. But I will never, except for a promise that I made to my son about 4 years from now, I will never wear another Carolina jersey. I just did that for you, okay? You should know how much you mean to me and how much I really would do anything to get people excited about the word, okay? And I will never cheer for the Tar Heels. I don't care if they're playing Russia, okay? I'm not going to pull for them. And I've tried the whole I'm not going to pull against them thing. I've tried that. That doesn't work for me either. By the way, I'm an equal opportunity guy in this area, okay? I feel the same way about the Cowboys and the Yankees. Period, all right? Had somebody leave this morning and say, we had no idea why we were at this church. But now we know. We hate the Yankees and the Cowboys and the Tar Heels as well. So, you know, I know that's silly, okay? But it works up here. Guess what? If you follow sports, you feel the same way. You just don't feel the same way about the same teams, okay? If you're a Carolina fan, it's probably Duke. It could be Kentucky. It could be Louisville. It could be the Oakland / Los Angeles / Oakland / wherever they are today, Raiders. It could even be the New England Patriots. I don't understand that because personally I kind of like the Patriots, but some of you don't. I get that. I like them, and I love sinners. We're starting a new teaching series in a couple weeks called Loving Like Jesus. It's all about loving sinners. I love sinners. I'm just not going to join their team again. Does that make sense? I'm just not going to be on their team any longer. If they're mocking my Jesus, I'm not going to stick around and be a part of that. You see, Legalism in these areas, it's really easy. Legalism says it's black, it's white, you do it this way, it's right, it's wrong, it's all the time. Legalism says protect yourself from everything that's evil. Don't be around anybody who you would consider to be a sinner, okay? Isolate yourselves. Don't have any contact. Cut off all negative media. Cut off everything else. That's easy. That's easy. What's hard is wisdom. And that's the key. Take a look at Proverbs 3. Proverbs 3:18 says, wisdom is a tree of life. And notice how, you know, this symbol carries over to other writings. Wisdom is a tree of life to those who embrace her. Happy are those who hold her tightly. I mean, if we want to be on this path of happiness, then we've got to use wisdom as to what water we're drawing in. We have to filter the water that we take in if we're going to have this happy, prosperous life, this life that God blesses. So here's the question that we really have to ask ourselves. Is this conversation, is this relationship, is this media that I'm, you know, being influenced by, is it bringing life or death? If I'm on Facebook and I see something in my news feed, and man, it just ticks me off. And so I decide I'm going to write a comment. You know, and I'm just pounding out that comment using the all caps key. And I don't know if you knew this or not, but all caps is shouting, okay? So and I'm just, I wish there was a triple all caps key. And I wonder how many exclamation points I can put in this. And then at the end, I hit send. Does that bring life or death? Did you know that you can unfollow people on Facebook? Did you know this? This is life-changing, okay? You probably knew you could unfriend people, but you thought, well, I don't really want to be that person, all right? But unfollowing, that means there's a way that we can still be friends, and I don't have to listen to a thing you say, period, you know? If there's somebody on Facebook who's a bad influence, and they bother you, or they lead you in the wrong direction, their conversations are always leading to death, just unfollow them. If there's media, you know, if you're watching a show and you're watching Netflix and you're thinking, man, this is not leading me to life at all. Crazy little thing. There's a button on your remote that has almost a full circle, but it's got a little opening at the top and there's a line coming right down there. If you push that button, guess what happens? The TV cuts off. Just like that. I mean, it's unbelievable. When you're in a conversation and it starts going to a place that's mocking Jesus or mocking your faith. I mean, it may even be a conversation with people who call themselves Christians, but they're mocking what you believe. You don't have to be rude. You don't have to bring out the Bible and point out point by point where they're wrong. You don't have to preach to them. You can just say, you know what, I got to go. And you can walk away. Ask yourself, is this conversation, is this relationship, is this media bringing life or death? You know, the proverb writer says in 13:20, he who walks with the wise grows wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm. The psalmist says, be careful where you're drawing your water from. Be careful who you're walking with and standing with and sitting with. And Proverbs says, you walk with the wise. Now, here's what Jesus did. He hung out with sinners. He just didn't get his water from them. What he did instead is he surrounded himself with life-giving circles. Jesus had several life-giving circles. When Jesus first began his public ministry, he picked 12 men. And he said, I want you guys to be with me. I want you guys to be around me all the time. Part of that, yeah, was pouring into their lives and teaching them and discipling them. But part of that was drawing strength and encouragement from them. And within that circle of 12, Jesus had, you know, three really close friends, Peter, James, and John. We refer to them as the inner circle. He taught them. He loved them. But they loved him as well. One of the circles that Jesus had, we don't talk a whole lot about, was his friendship with this family, with Martha and Mary and Lazarus. And you read through the Gospels and they just show up again and again. It's because Jesus loved being with this family. You can tell from the accounts, you know, where they spend a lot of time with together. Jesus is very comfortable in their house and they are very comfortable with him being there. Martha says stuff to him that we're like, ugh, I can't believe she said that to Jesus, you know. But they had this two-way give and take sort of relationship. Man, if Jesus Christ, the Son of God, needed life-giving circles, how in the world do we think that we can go through life and be on the path that leads to happiness and just do it on our own? Jesus had these circles, and we need them as well. So real quickly, what does a life-giving circle do? Simply put, these are the people who walk with me, who stand with me, and who sit with me. These are the people who we call, we text, we say, man, this is the good stuff that's happening in my life. This is the bad stuff that's happening. These are the people who stand with us when we've got our back up against the wall, you know, when it feels like nobody's on our side, and they say, whoa, 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 I am right there with you. These are the people who, you know, when our hope is dim and we have no idea what tomorrow's going to look like, they're the ones who sit at the table with us, and they don't have to fill the space. They're just there. We need life-giving circles. So what does that look like? What does a life-giving circle look like? In my mind, it looks like this. It looks like growing relationships, because it's got to be more than just casual friends, right? There's also engagement with Scripture. It's not just friends sitting around griping about their husbands. It's not just friends sitting around talking about sports. You bring Scripture in. And it doesn't have to be a one-hour inductive Bible study. It doesn't have to be a Beth Moore video series. You know, it could be as simple as, hey, I read this verse. I don't know what it means. Let's talk about it. And then for me, I think there also has to be heartfelt prayer. You tell each other, here's what's going on in my life. Here's the stuff I don't get. Here's the stuff that scares me to death. And then you pray for each other. We all need that, I think. The question is, where do we get it? You know, throughout my ministry here, and I'm starting my 30th year here in a couple weeks, this has been the area that we just seem to butt up against a wall and really can't seem to get anything going. Sometimes I feel myself giving up. Sometimes I feel like it's just not worth the time or the effort because it's not going to happen and it's not going to work. And then just a couple weeks ago, I started thinking, maybe it's because we make this too hard. Maybe it's because we make it too difficult. We make it too complicated. Where can we find a life-giving circle? Let me give you two really easy places, okay? Number one, you might just need to convert a circle. And I don't mean conversion as in, you know, bring them around the baptistry and dunk them all and then we've got a circle ready to go. You may already be in a great circle of friends. You already love each other. You already spend time with each other. You hang out with each other. Turn it into a life-giving circle. Say, hey, would it be okay if when we're together, you know, we just open up the Bible a little bit and talk about it and then maybe pray for each other? And I know that's difficult depending on who's in the circle, right? But if it's the difference between the path that leads to blessing and the path that leads to destruction, it'd be worth it, wouldn't it? Or maybe you want to start a circle. Now, sometimes when you go to church, sometimes it can feel like, and I know we've done this, we've done it with this particular thing. It could feel like, oh, to start something like this, I'm going to have to go through a 9-week leadership training class. I'm going to need to get a certificate. I got to be an apprentice for a while. I need to have somebody supervise me. And we do all that if you want, okay? Or here's another idea. If you got two friends and a Bible, start a circle, okay? Just start a circle. You don't even have to tell us about it, really. Of course, we would like for you to do that because beyond converting and starting one day, I'd like to be able to encourage people to join circles that you've already converted or started. But there's circles all around us. We just don't call them that. There's MOPS, Mothers of Preschoolers. There's the Man Up Ministry. There are connection groups on Sunday mornings and women's stuff and men's stuff. And we've got stuff that's going on with the youth. So there's already circles, but you can start another one if you want. And you can do it under the radar. I don't care. You really can, okay? Because guess what? These circles aren't for Reidsville Christian. And they're not for me. They're for you. These are your life-giving circles. You know, it doesn't have to be rocket science. And I think that's the problem. I think that's what we've done in the past. We've tried to make this so difficult. It doesn't have to be that way. It can just be three guys in a dorm. It could just be three ladies at Starbucks. And the world, your world can change. But more than anything, you know, as we start this new year, I just want us all to be on the path that leads to life. Not the path that leads to destruction. And it's one thing for me to say, I really want that. But as I read the Psalms, the psalmist says a big part of that is the water that you're taking in. The water that you're allowing to nourish your life. So let me ask you again. Where are you getting your water? Where are you drawing your water from? What are the influencers? Who are the influencers in your life? And are they influencers that will put you on this path that will bring blessing? Or will they just send you off in another direction that'll bring destruction? This morning there are Stephen ministers in our family here, and they'll be in the back of the auditorium. If you want to step back and pray with somebody, you can come forward and spend some time with me and talk with me about what's going on in your life. But maybe for most of us, while we're singing during this time of a reflection, I just want to encourage you to ask yourself the question and be really honest. Where am I getting my water from? Where is it really coming from? And if that's where it's coming from, no wonder this is the direction I'm going. Maybe make a commitment. I'm going to make sure that there are some people around me that are going to bring life and not death. If your need is to step out this morning, we invite you to do so as we stand and as we sing.